Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hey, so I'm speaking to you while I'm also trying to frantically do an Esther. I'm flying to Mexico tomorrow, and I've only just found out that we need an Esther for going to via America. So me and the rest of the band are trying to do it, and I'm on one of those websites, and I've just tried to upload my passport photo, and it's doing that processing thing with a little circle going round and round. And I've just got one of those feelings in my tummy. And maybe I'm not going to Mexico. Anyway, never mind. We can think about other things like this week's podcast and everything else that's going on. I've got a slightly manic energy to me, I feel. I'm going to try not to transmit that to you because that's not what you need in life. I have had a very busy week. I'm not complaining. This is not a complaint. I am not moaning. It's just an acknowledgement that with my album coming out, various gigs I've been doing, recording a couple of new podcasts, my eldest boy finishing school, my youngest finishing nursery, my middle one finishing SATs, my other one needing his braces to be fixed. You know, I'm kind of like brained a little bit at capacity. But it's all cool, man. It's all cool. I'm sat here, got the little wheel going around on the website. Life is flipping chill. And actually, I'm doing a really nice thing tonight. So I'm sitting here kind of half ready to go out, half not, because tonight I'm going to see the new play that Dan from my husband Richard's band, The Feeling, has written the music for. It's Brokeback Mountain. It's obviously based on the film that I think came out about 20 years ago now. About the two cowboys and their love affair. And all the complexity of it. And at first I thought it was a musical and I thought the cowboys were going to sing to each other. And in retrospect, I think it's quite smart the way they're doing it, that it's a play that has a band on stage and they sort of provide the narration of what's going on. So I think that's going to be really lovely, actually, and very moving. So that's tonight. And then, yeah, tomorrow at the airport, hopefully, if this all works out. But never mind about that. I had a really lovely week because I've interviewed Heidi this week, Heidi Range. So I first met Heidi, actually, probably around the time that Brokeback came out, in the early noughties when she became part of the Sugar Babes. And fun fact, she took over in the Sugar Babes, the trio girl band, as you know, from Siobhan Donaghy, who's one of my previous Spinning Plates guests. So, you know, there's a nice bit of serendipity going on with that. And Heidi has always been such a lovely, very smiley, warm person. I think you're going to hear her smile coming down the microphone because she's got that real warmth about her. She has two little girls who are 1 and 5. So her eldest is at school now. And she was talking actually about the fact that she hasn't really done much in the terms of work. Obviously, she's been very busy raising her babies, but she's sort of ready to kind of get back into herself now. But actually, when we talked more, her work ethic and where she's come from is pure graft, you know, starting when she was barely into double figures in a local dance troupe in Liverpool and performing and singing in local pubs and clubs, all the way through being part of Atomic Kitten, scouted for a band called Scooch, who actually represented the UK Eurovision, doing a solo project and then ending up with the Sugar Babes. So there's been many, many phases and chapters to Heidi's career. And I'm really excited to see what she's going to do next. Anyway, it was glorious to meet with her. I don't get what's going on this website. The little spinny wheel is still there. Wish me luck, people. Anyway, let's listen to lovely Heidi and I'll see you on the other side. Oh, it's so nice to see you, Heidi. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's another one of those times, sometimes when I have people around to chat to them, I feel like we should start recording from when you arrive because we've already been chatting quite a while and covered a lot of stuff. It's just really nice to see. I don't know when I last saw you actually, but we bump into each other every so often, don't we?
I know when we last saw each other.
Oh, you do?
It was in Chiswick Park in lockdown when you was allowed to exercise outdoors.
Yes. God, you've got good memory.
Yeah.
And also, what a crazy time.
Yeah. It was like when you were allowed in groups of six outdoors mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah.
And I think we were buying sausage rolls or sandwiches from the kiosk in the park.
Which in those days, big day out,
yeah,
quite frankly.
Massive day out.
And just to cut to present day, am I right that you've just been on the jury panel for Eurovision?
Yes.
That is so flipping cool. Tell me about that experience.
Do you know what? It was quite bizarre because I was asked to do it, which was a huge honour. But you wasn't allowed to tell anyone.
Really?
And you wasn't allowed to, you know, comment on the Eurovision in the build-up. And Liverpool hosted it.
Yeah.
So loads of people were asking me, oh, are you coming home for the Eurovision? And in interviews, I was getting asked about it. And I had to just be a little bit, like, not interested.
Oh.
What was disappointing about it, I thought we'd get to go to the arena and watch it, which we didn't. The jury has to go. Like, we were in a green room at the BBC in Manchester.
Hang on a minute. So the jury performance that they do on the Friday night before the live final on the Saturday, you weren't in the arena?
No. So we...
Because you've got to be so impartial. You've got to be impartial.
So we watched one of the semi-finals.
Yes.
One of the semi-final rehearsals on the Wednesday. And we had to judge that.
Mm-hmm.
But then that was only as a backup... backup marks if something went wrong with the audience. So that didn't count. But then on the Friday, we went and watched the dress rehearsal of the final. And then you have to, you know, rate them, which is really difficult when you're judging 25 acts. It's a lot.
Yeah, that is a lot.
I mean, you obviously have your top ones and your bottom ones, but the middle is quite tricky. But they did decorate the room for us with some bunting and... they got an Indian takeaway for us. And,
perfect.
And it was a really nice panel, so...
Am I right in thinking as well that you're not allowed to talk to each other while you're watching?
You're allowed to comment on the performances, but nothing that would influence anybody else.
What about a bit of dancing to your favourites?
I think we were all terrified. We were terrified to look at each other, say anything.
Yeah.
And they actually said, it was like a really silent jury room.
Yeah.
But we were terrified of doing the wrong thing because, you know, it's quite strict.
Well, it's a shame you didn't get to see Liverpool.
I thought the arena was... amazing, and
so
how they
good.
Hosted it was incredible.
The whole, I was there Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Oh, so you was there?
Yeah, I didn't watch the live final though. I got back home and watched it here. But I soaked up as much the atmosphere as I could, and I was walking around Liverpool all day on the Saturday. I had a few hours to myself. let's put you in. It was 18 degrees, blue sky, sunshine, and the whole Liverpool was in the best mood.
Yeah.
Everybody was so friendly.
Because you hosted a disco in Peter Jones, didn't you?
John Lewis. Actually,
sorry,
yes.
I said Peter Jones because the one by me is called that.
Don't worry.
How was that?
Yeah, so I did that on the Thursday. It was actually adorable. Loads of people came. It was a really good atmosphere. We had a DJ, we had a glitter station.
Amazing.
We just went for it. Then the next night I sang in the Eurovision Village just outside.
Oh, fab.
Which was awesome. And then I had a little job to do on the Saturday, and then I got home in the car and got all the way back here just in time.
Yeah.
And I know you have to retain probably a bit of impartiality, but just wondering if you agree with me that Cha 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 is one of the best pop records of this year. Flipping love of the Finnish entry. I keep playing it to the kids and they're not quite receiving my enthusiasm, but they will because I plan on playing it. It's a good one before school, get you up in the morning.
There's a few songs that I cannot get out of my head from me.
Yeah. Edgar Allan Poe. But that was catchy as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Do you know the one I can't get out of my head?
Yeah.
It's Carpe Diem. The one.
Which was that one?
The ones. Ha, ha. It's that little back and vocal just keeps going on in my head. But they
so
were
good.
They were like quite cheesy and playing up to the camera.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Me too. I think it was really joyful and I'm very excited you got to be a part of it.
Yeah.
I did get asked one time years ago it must have been like 2019, to do the judging thing. But I had a baby that year and I wasn't allowed to bring him to feed him during the time that I'd be judging. And even though I tried to convince them that he would be impartial, they were like, no, you can't have anyone else with you. So that counted me out. But I think it's a brilliant thing you did that. It's very cool. And it's great you got to do it when it was in the UK. I think it's wonderful.
I really enjoyed it.
Really cool. And what else have you got going on at the moment? What are you working on at the moment?
I've not been working on much. I mean, since I had my two girls, I've been in this little mummy bubble at home, which I've loved. You know, I lived out of a suitcase for so many years. When I had my girls, I just wanted to be at home with them. But my eldest has just started school and my little one's doing two mornings a week at nursery now. And I've got a nice group of people around me who I trust with the girls and the girls are comfortable with. So I'm emerging out of the bubble and wanting to get back out there and do some things for me.
Yes.
I'm 40 next week and I just feel like now's time to get a little bit of time back for myself as well.
Very much relate to all of that. I think it's when you've got a little, because your youngest is one, so it'd be two in August, and then your other little girl's five, you said.
Yeah.
So that time, that's such an intense period of time when they're that little. And I don't know how about you, but when I had my first, it felt very much like I'd had my sort of life before and then there was sort of this new chapter. And I didn't do any music really apart from a bit of writing between the time I had when he was born through till probably he was about four actually. It took me quite a long time to kind of find myself again really.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. I mean, it was a conscious decision. I did want to take time away and I don't regret it at all. Like when Aurelia went off to school last year, it had gone so fast.
Mm.
It makes me emotional thinking about it, but it was like, I thought, I was incredibly lucky that I was able to stay at home with her.
Mm.
But I just thought it's flown by so quickly and I don't regret a single minute of just hanging out with my little mate every day because now I don't get the choice, you know. I get emotional about my girls all the time. But and the little one's still tiny.
Mm.
So I still want to be predominantly at home and around for her too. But I just feel like I'd like to get a bit of me back as well. And my husband has always encouraged me to go and do things for myself.
Mm.
And I've struggled with that since having the girls. He'll always say, go away with the girls for the weekend or, you know, do this. And I'm like, are you just saying that so I say to you, yeah, go to Ibiza with the lads?
But is this a trick?
Yeah, because I've never really wanted to leave them.
Mm.
But this year, one of my friends had a big birthday and I went to the Cotswolds for two nights. And I did come back like a new person. And even last week when I went to Manchester for three nights for the Eurovision, I almost levitated back through the door after being away and having a few days to myself, able to just reply to messages,
yeah,
have a lay in, have a hot coffee, do something that was about me, not, you know, just being their mum. So, yeah, I feel like I'm just getting to a new stage where I'm ready to remember who I was a little bit more.
Oh, I think that's so brilliantly summed up, actually. And I think you've, when you said about the lion and the coffee and replying to messages, I think you've kind of summed up the sort of, for me, the like loophole that my work gives me, really, because obviously there's a bit where I do what I do, but actually it's all the sort of peripheral stuff that gives me that headspace. And without that, I've sort of struggled quite a bit with, I feel like I'm a good mum, actually. I think I kind of need a bit of that time when I've sort of had time to think about other things to make me engage again here. But it did take me years, actually, to really feel like I could start to feel what that looked like to me. I mean, I was looking at your career. I was thinking, you know, it's not entirely dissimilar to mine in some of the timeline of it. But you were doing music from really young and lots of different incarnations of it and always in the pop thing. And it's very heady. And you're saying about living out of a suitcase. And when you sort of reflect back on that, does it feel like a previous life or does it feel like it's still something you see as your future as well?
It absolutely feels like a different life. And it's not something I ever really think about, you know. I was at a children's party on Saturday and one of the school dads came over to me and he went, "I'm so sorry," he went, "I didn't know you was in the Sugar Babes." And I was like, what are you apologising for? And he was like, "But I didn't know." And I was like, "It's okay. Like, it's not something I think about myself, really." Because it was so long ago, in a way. But it does feel like a different life. But when I am reminded of it and think about it, it brings back happy memories and I'm proud of it. And I actually, you know, can now go, "God, wasn't that amazing?" You know?
Yeah, and so much success. And that must have been a very heady experience, that whole thing, like really just a real roller coaster of just so many hit records and working really hard. And there's probably bits of it that are really glorious, think of other bits you think, quite nice, I don't need to do some of that now.
Do you know what? There was obviously ups and downs throughout that journey, but I don't really... When I think back on my time with the group, I don't really think about those times. I just look back on it with fondness, really, and all the amazing things we did do. And I think also, you know, we were young girls and we're women now. So you have a little bit more compassion for yourself and the others and you go, "Gosh, like, look what you was dealing with at that age." Yeah, so I look back on it with fond memories, really, rather than the negative stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's a lovely thing to say about looking back with compassion about things when you realise you were dealing with a lot. Because actually, I think I'm a bit older than you, I'm 44, but I think when you look back on all the things you did, as you say, so young, and same with me, and sometimes it can be a bit like, oh yeah, now I realise I was only like 21 or 22 or whatever those little age, even younger maybe, dealing with what's the kernel of it? What were you doing when you were younger that made you want to go into music? Because it seems like that was always something you were destined to do.
I mean, Liverpool is such a musical city. Mm. Most of the children I was friends with, you know, we all went to dance school, we all went to sing and we all went to drama. That's what I did every single night after school and it's what I did every weekend. I mean, I was in a children's road show. And we used to play the social clubs and the pubs every weekend. We did a cabaret show. So we'd be doing Coca Cabana in like this random corner pub, you know. But I loved it. I lived for it, you know.
I'm just trying to picture that, by the way.
I'd be doing all the
Cobra.
Yeah, like with a little... the feathers on your head.
What age are you at this point?
I was probably... 12,
amazing. Yeah. So you can deal with any environment, basically. You can perform anywhere.
You was fixated on what the set list was going to be each weekend, who was going to get the big numbers. I always wanted to do like the Celine Dion number or Leanne Rimes.
Yes.
And So I always did that. And then I went, there was a theatre school in Liverpool that I didn't go to the full-time school. We couldn't afford to go there, but I used to go and do lessons there every weekend. And then one day they were approached by some producers who were putting a band together, which was Atomic Kitten. So I went for the audition for that. I was still at school. I was 15 then. And I got the part in the band. So I was in Atomic Kitten with Kerry Toner and Liz McLarnon.
You were 15?
I was 15, yeah.
So how is that actually working? So you're at school by day and then doing that, what, so evenings and weekends?
Yeah, so evenings and weekends I'd go into the studio. But the girls would tend to record in the day because they left school.
Mm.
And I'd go in after school. And then we did a few gigs. But then I got a phone call from some producers in London who I'd auditioned for when I was 14. And I'd lied about my age at this audition. You had to be 17. And when I remember going in, it was at Dan Sattick Studios. And they said, you're not 17, are you? And I think I cried and said, no, I'm 14. And they said, look, we'll hear you, but we'll have to keep you on file. And it transpires. I think that audition was for the band Scooch.
Oh, yes.
Who represented the
UK.
Yeah.
Wow.
But then when I turned 17, they called me and it was Stock Aitken, who were the producers. And they wanted to me to come down and produce me as a solo artist. And so I left Atomic Kitten and started doing the Stock Aitken music. And then I went to see a music lawyer because they asked me to sign a contract, and she was the Scouser. And she was also the manager of Sugar Babes, and she convinced me to leave them and go with her, again as a solo artist. And then a few months later, Siobhan left the group and she asked me to come to London and meet the girls. And I did an audition, and then 2 weeks later, I was on CD UK. So it was just, it was a real strange pathway into the industry, but it was what I always wanted to do.
Yeah, that determination of turning up to an audition at 14 when you're supposed to be 17 shows me the intent, yeah, the ambition there. That's incredible. And what amazing, all those touchstones, the things that everybody knows. You know, even like Scooch, but Stock Aitken, Atomic Kitten, these are all things
It's like sliding doors, really, isn't
it? Yeah, crazy. But actually, that is unique, because some people might just get one opportunity with something, but to keep, there's obviously something in the kismet of just like something's going to work out one of these times, just getting the right balance and the right group of people at the right time. And serendipity is such a huge part of what we do, isn't it?
Yeah,
all those things coming together. And how old were you then by the time you got to the Sugar Babes?
18.
18?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. You'd already done so much. Blimey. That is crazy. How exciting. I mean, that whole thing, that whole world, that CD UK time. I mean, nowadays, the pop scene, obviously, music is still huge, but we don't have that whole, like, the TV programs that used to be on every weekend and all of that. I don't, we're lucky we got to experience that,
oh,
I think.
It was so fun, wasn't it?
It really was. Live telly.
Yeah.
Like, CD UK. Do you remember when it came out, the ad break, and you'd be stood there like, I remember one time going on there, I had a single called Get Over You, and I was in my first position with these four dancers, quite nervous, and one of the dancers just suddenly went, oh, I've forgotten how the dance routine goes. And then it was like, and over to you. I was like, here we go.
Yeah.
It was so, so ludicrous and funny.
Sometimes think, would I just have the fear if I was put in that situation now? Like, you go, how did I do that? Like,
I know, but isn't that is, I think that fear and thinking things through a different way happens when you get older.
Yeah.
Like, I get way more nervous or worried about things that I never used to before. I mean, like heights. I now got a bit of a vertigo. I used to go up on roller coasters and all sorts, and now I'm a bit like, but I just think that creeps in. And when you look back, especially from where you're at now, where for a few years now, you haven't had to put yourself in this really quite terrifying thing where your senses are so alert, you're so focused. But they don't happen in oblivion. It's not like someone would literally just be like, right, here's the mic, on you go. They'd be like that build-up process. So if and when you want to return to it, you'll get match fit.
And it, I think it does come back. It's like there's a part of you that, you know, comes alive when you perform, isn't that? You know, it is terrifying. I remember even with the band, I wouldn't have stage fright, but I'd go out and then say, halfway through the gig, I go, oh my God, look at all these people. And I'd be having a little conversation with myself on stage, like, you're in the middle of the set, in the middle of your tour.
Yeah.
Get a grip.
Yeah.
You've got to finish the show. But it wouldn't be like, as it was going on, it'd be like in the middle of a performance.
I know exactly what you mean. You'd be suddenly like seeing everything in real, like real terms again. Like, oh, this is really me. This is what's happening right now. Those people are watching me. I've got to finish the song. We've got to keep the show going. Yeah, it's almost like you sort of go hot and cold for a second of like, whoa.
And then you have to get on with it.
Yes, you do.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I mean, I obviously had a bit of time where I wasn't performing, but it was quite a lot. My eldest is 19 now, so it's hard for me to remember what that felt like. But how have you experienced it with putting that side of yourself on hold for a little while?
In what sense?
The performing and the music. Because if you've been doing it since you were Copacabana World, 12, let me dance for you. Like, it's been part of who you are for such a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to music a lot and I sing around the house all the time. Mostly Disney songs now with the kids. But I do miss singing. I love singing. You know, it's part of me. I think what made me miss it more was as my little one's getting older, she's starting to get into more and more music, and she loves Little Mix.
Oh, yeah.
And her godfather got us tickets to take her to see them at the O2. And he used to, how I met him was he was my first dance partner on our first Top of the Pops
Amazing.
Performance. And then he became our choreographer, and but he's Aurelia's godfather. And anyway.
God, that's very lovely.
Yeah. And so we both took her to the O2 to see them. And it was quite funny because we were watching them and he was like, does it make you want to get up? And I was like, yeah, a little bit. And I was like, does it make you want to get up? Because he's not dancing anymore. And he was like, yeah. And it was that, when I go to shows, you kind of want to grab the mic, don't you, and have a go. And also, like there's a part of me that would love to show her what mummy can do, you know? I'd like, both of them. I'd like to do stuff where they could see me do things now that would inspire them and make them proud as they get older too.
Yeah, and actually I think, as you and I and our peers have grown up, we have got that bit now where it's like women doing what they do with their kids and showing them, and that sort of next generation feeling. And actually women doing really well and really feeling good about themselves in their 40s. I've actually really enjoyed, I know you're about to turn 40 next week, so just as a, you know, indication, I think it's a really nice time actually, because you do feel a lot of that kind of self-doubt has kind of fallen away. Just I feel like a lot more relaxed about things and just enjoying things in a quite selfish way of like, actually, I'm just having a lovely time.
Yeah.
In a way, I don't think I quite felt as liberated maybe until now. It's just been really lovely.
I feel the same. I'm really excited about turning 40. I mean, it's a privilege to be alive, isn't it?
You know? It is.
But I think I feel less self-conscious. I worry less about what people think of me. I guess you just focus on the more important things, you know.
Yeah.
I feel incredibly lucky to have a lovely family, touch wood, we're all healthy. You know, life is good.
Mm.
If opportunities come my way now, it is, you know, it's about embracing them,
mm-hmm.
and not panicking and worrying about if you're a size 8 or a size 14 and, you know, all the stupid things you worried about when you were younger.
Yeah, it kind of falls away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It just doesn't seem. And actually, I don't know about you, but I feel a bit more respect for what my body's been capable of now in a way I didn't when I was younger at all. Just being able to, I don't know, run about and get done what I need to get done and feel quite sort of strong in myself. I don't think I ever thought about myself in those terms when I was younger.
No, I think you're so judgmental on yourself when you're younger.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's about health, you know.
Yes, exactly.
Being healthy for my kids. And
yeah.
Being here as long as you can.
Exactly.
Be around for them.
Yeah, and I agree with you as well that getting older is a privilege, all of that. I really sort of seize all that. I think that's brilliant. Well, if we could talk a little bit about your girls. So did you always want to be a mum?
I did, yeah. I mean, I always say that the two things I always wanted since I was a little girl was one, to be a singer, and two, to be a mum. So I feel incredibly lucky that I've ticked both of those boxes. They're my two biggest dreams come true. And obviously my girls are my, you know, the thing I'm most proud of.
Yeah, I know. It's really like radiating off you. That's really lovely. And are you from a big family? Have you got?
No, there's just me and my sister, which is actually really nice. My sister's my best friend. And we're still incredibly close. Even when I went to Manchester last week, she came to stay with me for the 3 days.
Oh, really? Oh, that's lovely.
We got to hang out together, which was really nice.
That is nice.
So it's funny that I've ended up with two girls. And
yeah.
I really hope that they can have the same bond that me and Hayley have got.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they will, actually. I think that thing of growing up and having a shared childhood is just such a big thing, isn't it? But I think also, I don't know if your mum... your family did this, but my mum kind of imparted to me and my siblings the importance of us keeping in touch.
Yeah.
She's kind of made it not something we just take for granted, but we have to be quite active about it. That
makes
sense.
Absolutely, yeah. We were always told, you know, you always have your sister's back. That's your best friend.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's how we were raised and that's how I'll raise my girls as well.
Yeah.
And I'm so pleased that we've got that bond. It's, you know, it's the nicest thing in the world.
Yeah, it really is. It's really special. And I think, yeah, my mum will like, I don't know, send a message going like, your brother's, I don't know, doing this today. Can you just send him a little good luck or something like that? So she kind of makes us queen.
Oh.
I hope to do that with my kids as well, actually. Because I think it's quite easy, isn't it, for people just to kind of let relationships drift. But if you're kind of, I don't know, it's just definitely been passed on to us that's not an option.
No.
Yeah, and I was reading about, I don't know if you put it on your Instagram or did interviews about it, but you were talking about after you had your first baby and you're having a second baby and you really sadly had a miscarriage during lockdown.
Yeah.
What was the reaction like for you from talking about that publicly?
You know, really positive feedback, like some really lovely messages from other women who've gone through it. I mean, the whole reason I decided to speak about it was, I think, even though my husband was incredibly supportive and, you know, it was his loss too, it's quite a lonely thing to go through because it's your body and no one else really knows what that feels like as you're feeling all those symptoms. And I just found it quite a lonely thing to go through. So I thought if I can speak about it and someone else can go, oh, yeah, you know, I feel like that. And also when it happened, I spoke to a lot of friends about it and they go, oh, that happened to me too. And there were so many of my friends who've sadly had miscarriages. It's so common and I just think it's a good thing to talk about if it can help support anyone.
Absolutely. No, I really applaud you for that, Heidi. And I think the way we handle it in general and the conversations that surround miscarriage have changed massively, even in the time since I had my first baby, because I feel like now everybody's a lot more open about, as you say, things like the loneliness and how it affects you and the impact and the sadness and the need to just be tender with yourself at that time. And yeah, I think there was a time when people, I mean, previous generations definitely, when it was just very much not spoken about, swept under the carpet. And I think all those conversations are so important. And as you say, I mean, so many people go through it. It's something I've experienced, loads of my girlfriends. But I think that solidarity and being able to share it counts for a lot. I mean, so much about that whole process of, I don't know, the times when you want to have a baby or when something hasn't gone right or when you're worried about something, particularly when you deal with baby loss, I think it can feel really isolating and you can't help but go back over things. And was it something I did? Did I do something wrong? And then trying to sort of come to terms with it. So I think having chats about it can only be a good thing, really.
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky enough to have had Aurelia first, and falling pregnant with her was very easy, I guess, and really straightforward. So you know, it was a case of ignorance is bliss when I had her. But then I had two miscarriages between her and Athena. And so I was lucky enough to go, look, you've got a healthy child there. But when I had the first miscarriage, it was bizarre because it was a thing called a blighted ovum. And so obviously I did a pregnancy test. It was positive. I was getting all the symptoms. Even on my way to the scan, you know, I was throwing up. I was having cravings, you know, all the classic symptoms. And I never forget, I went in for the scan and the sonographer just said, I'm really sorry, but there's no baby there. And I was like, what do you mean? And she was like, you're pregnant, but you're not pregnant. And I'd never heard of it. And I was like, so were you saying like, I've made it up or, you know, I don't understand. Mm. And it's basically when you do fall pregnant, but the embryo doesn't develop. But that was a really hard thing.
And your body
thing.
Just keeps going through
your body carries on as though you're pregnant. So the sac continues to grow. Not the, is it the sac? I'm forgetting all the specifics. It wouldn't be the sac. The
like your womb is still growing and everything's
the uterus grows, but the sac is empty.
That must have been so devastating.
And then people were going, so like a phantom pregnancy. And I was going, no, it's not a phantom pregnancy because you was pregnant. I still had to go in and have the operation for them to remove everything because the miscarriage didn't then happen naturally because we were in lockdown with that first one.
Mm.
And they said, you can just wait for it to naturally happen. But it didn't. So my symptoms continued for the 12 weeks. And then I had to go in for the op. But it was hard to get your head around. She was like, did I make it up? You know, like.
Yeah. And I think also at that time as well, because you're thinking, sometimes your brain starts thinking, but I still want to have a baby. And now I have to wait for this I can't even do anything. I'm sort of stuck in this situation where my body still thinks it's continuing with something. Your hormones are all over the place.
Yeah,
I mean, and that must have been
and you're
very
reading
intense.
Things on Google and you're thinking maybe it just hasn't grown that big yet. And yeah. When I go back, it will. And
yeah,
you know, there's a
then was there still a chance? Yeah. I know.
But I've got two lovely girls, and I know I'm very lucky because, you know, I've got friends who can't carry children. So yeah, I'm not complaining.
No, I didn't perceive it that way at all. Yeah. I just think I was really impressed with how you spoke about it. And thank you for letting me talk about it with you now, because I think it's just something that's so common. And I think there'll be people who listen and think, oh yes, that's happened to me. And it's reassuring. And I think I read a quote from you, he said, as soon as you get that pregnancy test, your brain can't help you sort of move into a different lane of your life. And you picture, okay, there's going to be this person here by then, and this will be happening a year from now. And having to sort of wind that back.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. And as I say, I've experienced something similar. So I do know that feeling, and it's a very sort of private sadness at the time. Yeah. But I think talking, if it feels right, then it is right, definitely.
I'm sorry you've been through it too. Oh,
thank you. But like you, I feel really, you know, grateful for the family I have.
Yeah.
And I think we all know, we've always got friends and people that have gone through fertility issues. And I grew up with the backdrop of my mum trying very hard to have a baby after my sister. And I say this as something she's spoken about it publicly. She ended up going through 10 miscarriages during my sort of teenage years. So I think in my family, I'm quite...
That's devastating. Don't know,
I've just seen fertility issues in lots of different dimensions. So yeah, it's something I'm kind of familiar with, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm very happy that you do have your two little girls.
Thank you.
So you've spoken about how your husband's been encouraging you to think about the next thing and you want to do something for yourself. Have you got any idea what shape this takes?
I'm open to lots of different things. I mean, I'm only just starting to get my head around it, but there's a few shows that I'd love to do.
You got any favourites?
Strictly is my favourite.
Yeah.
I mean, you've obviously experienced it.
I did it, yeah.
I mean, it's just magical, isn't it?
Yeah.
I cry watching it every year. As soon as that opening tune comes on, I get goose pimples. I love the magic of it.
Yeah.
And I just watch the dancers and I think, I'd love to just have the opportunity to learn those dancers, wear those costumes.
I'm pretty sure that would be something you could... they would surely bite your arm off to have you do that.
That would be my dream show.
I think, let me make some calls.
and also, I think my little one would get quite excited watching Mummy do that.
Yeah. It's like a fantasy world. It's like eating all the sweets you want to eat with no one telling you to stop. It's like everything bejeweled and extra and the live band and the dancing. It's like, woo, it's like Willy Wonka.
But I mean, I could imagine it's terrifying as well.
Literally the most terrifying thing I've ever done.
That'd be so cool.
That
would be my dream show, actually. But, you know, I'd like to do some more singing. I'd like to do some presenting. Mm-hmm. I'm just open to new possibilities and doing a few more things for me.
And when you think of it, do you feel excited about it?
Yeah. Especially like, you know, just like I say, going away last week and doing a little bit of work on my own. I come alive in a different way.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like waking up to a bit of yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Something that's been hibernating a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I think that early years bit when they're small... It's so, people talk a lot about your kids' personality coming out as they get older, but I always think as a parent, your personality comes out too, and you start working out what kind of mum you want to be and what things are important to your family and which bits you want to try and, you know, exaggerate with them and which bits you're thinking, well, you know, let's try and, you know, what is our family about? What are our values? But then when they get to 3, 4, 5, it's quite a good time to start thinking as they go back to, you know, start school and all this, like, okay, what else is out there? It's quite exciting, particularly for someone like you that's grown up with it, I think. And how do you think your mum felt about you when you were performing and you're so little? And how would you feel if your girls were doing Copacabana at 12?
I think the Copacabana thing at 12 is, now I think it's a bit odd. I probably wouldn't want the girls doing that.
I don't think it's that odd. I grew up with something called Mini Pops. That was weird. That was the older, that was in the 80s. They had kids who probably between the ages of about 8 and 14, and they'd wear makeup and do whatever the big songs were of the day, like the little girls with lipstick and things, and they perform them. Sometimes like a little bit flirty, But I was obsessed with it. And then suddenly my parents were like, you're not allowed to watch that anymore. But that was all I wanted to watch was Mini Pops.
Yeah. I mean, I won't even let my daughter put makeup on. You know, she'll say, oh, Mummy, can I try your makeup? I'm like, no. You're five. No, absolutely not. I want to keep them as young as possible for as long as possible.
Mm.
Because, you know, you want them to have their innocence. And I don't want to watch and... slightly older things. But I want to, she's got the bug. Aurelia's got the bug. I mean, we had this thing at school last week, which was called a music pet and zoo,
mm-hmm.
where they go in and they try all the instruments out and then they can take up a lesson next year. And the whole way around, she was like, Mummy, I want to do singing. And I was like, yeah, baby, but you know, you could try an instrument and we can sing together at home. No, I want to do singing lessons like you, Mummy. So she's and every night she comes home from school, it's Matilda the musical all night. She's jumping on the sofa, she's watching herself in the mirror, the little one's dancing, watching her. So at the moment, she's definitely got tendencies to be following my career path rather than my husband's.
Yeah.
He's a property developer. So,
oh, no, come on. What we do is way more fun.
But I just want I just want them to be who they want to be.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to try and push her in any direction.
Nah, I don't think it works anyway, really. I think just let them find their own way. But I think for my kids, I've always said, I don't mind if they don't work in music, but I just want them to get as much out of it as I do in terms of like an emotional thing. Like music's always been such a support to me, and like you singing around the house is like a really big tonic and it just makes me feel better. So yeah. I hope they give that. I realised while I'm talking to you that actually not that long ago, I interviewed Siobhan from the Sugar Babes. So I was thinking it'd probably be quite odd if I didn't ask you how it feels that they're doing their thing again. I mean, she was obviously, Siobhan was away from the Sugar Babes when you were doing it. It's like a very strange setup, your band, by the way, but a lovely one, but just so funny, the moving parts. But she was saying in that time that, you know, she went off and did her solo thing, but now coming back together, she feels actually a little bit like you were saying, that sort of compassion. Because, you know, I think she and Keisha and Mutia had really been through highs and lows when they were working together and the bit where she left and all the sort of dynamic of that. But now as adult women, they'd kind of come back to it and we're actually being really kind with each other and supportive. But I don't know, I haven't had the experience of seeing a music project I was involved in then being back on the scene and hearing those songs again. What's it like to see them do stuff?
I mean, I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
You know, they were touring together for many years before they, you know, acquired the name again. They were MKS and they were touring were doing the songs for a long time. So, you know, I know they've had more success because they've acquired the name again, but they're doing what they've done for years and you know, I'm happy for them. It's nice that the songs are still out there.
Yeah.
You know, I'm proud that I was part in the success of the songs. So, I wish them well, you know.
No, I think it's really lovely because I think, obviously, I can see from the sort of press angle, there's always that thing, and they've done this time eternal of trying to make women sort of take bits out of each other. But actually, I think that there's so much generosity from all of you about this sort of shared history and all the things that have contributed to where things are at. And obviously you got out of it things that you adored, but you're in a different place now. You want to do something different. So it's quite, it's sort of like a nice feeling of like, I'm at peace with that. And for them, go and do it. And,
absolutely, yeah. There's no hard feelings on my part. And I don't know Siobhan. I've met her maybe twice, and she was lovely. She was a really nice girl, and I wish them well.
Yeah, exactly. And well, and they wish you well. I know because I saw Mutia saying about giving you flowers. I thought, you know, like the metaphorical give you flowers of like everything that you contributed to that. I think it's really lovely. I think it's like, it's sort of like quite, maybe I'm being a bit twee here, but I feel like this sort of nice feeling of us all kind of growing, we've all grown up. Do you know what I mean? Like,
hopefully.
Yeah, exactly.
You would hope we have, wouldn't
you? Yeah. Yeah, but also I think now that we're older and able to talk as well about some of the bits where it's tricky or some of the graft that goes in behind the scenes, it's like, you know what I mean? It's not like it's it's all a bit more kind of like the rough and ready of us all just kind of supporting each other and trying to get done. We all know it's not the easiest job, but we're trying to do the things we can do and find our feet and,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just keep onwards, everybody just pushing on. It's like, that's, if there's momentum, that's a good, can only be a good thing.
Yeah. And it's also support, like you say, supporting other women. Like,
yeah.
I champion women doing well, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a girl scale. So
yes.
I don't want to tear someone down. I want to build someone up, you know?
Yeah. And also being part of something successful that you were a huge part of, and the most successful chapter can only be something that contributes to where you're at now as well, actually. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The success they're having now is still a shared thing because you're part of their story.
Yeah.
And part of those songs. So it's all about you, basically.
Okay.
Oh, well, it's been so lovely to talk to you. I have to say, you've always been so warm and smiley. I feel like when I told people I was going to speak to you today, everybody's very fond of you, Heidi.
Oh.
Which is a nice thing. So.
That's a nice thing to say.
It's true, though. It's true. It's been a joy to hang out with you.
Oh, thank you.
And please
for having me.
Keep me up to speed with whatever happens next. Yes. I'm excited to see what you do now.
Yeah, thank you.
It's exciting. Oh, how lovely was Heidi. So nice to spend time with her. And how cool to hear all about the Eurovision jury process. I enjoyed that very much. And I very much hope to see her on Strictly very soon. I think she'd be wonderful on that. If you weren't curious about... Sorry about the music in the background, by the way, that's Kit. Kit, can you turn it down a tiny bit, darling? Please? Seriously? He's just shrugging at me. He just shrugged at me. He's 14. Thank you. Turned it down. If you want to know the status of my ESTA application, are you curious about that? I've done it all. I submit it all. And I'm now, it says it's pending a result within 72 hours. So let's just hope that they really mean like 5 minutes, please. Otherwise, it's going to be a little bit of a problem. Anyway, de-stress, I am not worried. I'm sat on a sofa, my little cat Titus. Can you hear him purring? Can you hear that? There he is. Oh, yes. Anyway, he's chilling me out. And tonight I get to see the love story of the Cowboys, so everything will be all right in the end. Actually, I seem to remember it's a sad ending, so maybe that's not true. Anyway, wish me luck. I'll tell you what. When I get to Mexico, I'll have earned that margarita. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to Guadalajara, and apparently near where that area, the region, there's a town called Tequila. Get me there. All right, I will love you and leave you. I'll let you know all about how it went when I speak to you next week. And thank you, as ever, for lending me your ears. It's funny, when this gets published, I hopefully will be the other side of the gig I'm about to do, and still in Mexico, but about to come home. Funny idea. I won't be here. My cat might be where I am, but I won't be where I am. Anyway, have a lovely week, whatever you're up to, and see you soon. Lots of love. Bye-bye. Adios, amigos.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.